So good morning, everyone. Thank you for the invitation to share with you this morning. And really glad it coincided with a visit home to my mum in Maple Ridge today. So I can be here in person and not on a Zoom screen. And also coming from Toronto, get to enjoy a bit of an early spring. So I spent the full day in the garden yesterday. So this morning, I thought I would start with a quick overview about Alongside Hope, who we are, how we work, and where we work. And then I want to end with a bit of a reflection on where we're seeing hope in the work that we do. So let me start with who we are. As Clarence has mentioned, we are an agency of the Anglican Church in Canada. We share an office in downtown Toronto, so if you're ever there, please pay us a visit. And our tagline very succinctly says who we are. We are Anglicans and partners working together for change in Canada and around the world. We are a registered charity. We're accredited by Imagine Canada, and we're consistently in the top 100 charities in Canada. Say we take stewardship and good governance seriously, I think is an understatement. Some of us, you may know us better by our previous name, the Primates World Relief and Development Fund, PWRDF, or the Primates Fund. We changed our name in 2024, and reaching a new name was a long process of discernment, a lot of listening, a lot of conversations. So the organization began in 1958, and it was in response to a bump, an earthquake, in a mine in Spring Hill, Nova Scotia. The bump killed 75 miners, and the Anglican Church wanted to respond, not just locally in Nova Scotia, but around Canada. So at the time, the primate played a really critical role in coordinating those efforts. And recognizing the value in coordination and coming together, a year later, General Synod created the Primates World Relief Fund. 10 years later, the D was added for development. And I think that showed an early tension with the name. From the early days, it was not a fund of an individual, not a primate making decisions about allocations or where money should go. Instead, it was about partnership. So after that considerable discernment process, I joined Alongside Hope at the end of 2023. And it was the third time they were going through a process of trying to discern a name change. And when I arrived, everyone said, it's not gonna happen. It's not gonna happen. I said, no, it's gonna happen. No, we've got it on the program there. It will go to the general assembly meeting. And sure enough, after many, many years of effort, a lot of listening, the new name was settled on Alongside Hope. And I think it's an important change because it reflects how we work. We come alongside other organizations. We're not doing for, but we're walking with. It's not just funding, but it's about entering into relationships, relationships that extend far beyond funding partnerships. So our new name really reflects the idea of coming alongside in collective efforts towards hope. And partners are at the center of our work. This picture here is our partner in Colombia, Communicarte, that creates radio programming to promote environmental protection. And all our programming is carried out by partners here in Canada and around the world. They know their contexts. They are part of their communities. And long after the projects end, they remain. So working through partnerships is effective, it's efficient, and it's sustainable. But it also requires a dedicated team here in Canada to ensure that funds are being used as intended. Last year, we worked with 30 partner organizations to deliver just over $5 million of programming from South America to Asia, from the Middle East to here in Canada. When we talk about programming, and that's my department as the Director of Programming and Partnerships, we focus on five thematic areas: health and healing, resilient livelihoods, creation care, humanitarian response, and right relationships, leaning into Indigenous partnerships. Over coffee, I'm happy to share a project from every one of those categories and many more. But I did want to highlight a few other things this morning as well. So in addition to working through partners, we also work in consortiums. So we're part of many networks and alliances, and I wanted to highlight three: Canadian Food Grains Bank, ACT Alliance, and Cooperation Canada. I want to pause and highlight Canadian Food Grains Bank. I suspect it's already somewhat familiar to you. But for me, it's one that I take particular pride in as a Canadian. It is a unique Canadian initiative. And as someone who has been working in this line of work for over 20 years, traveling around the world, speaking to others who work in this sector, the Canadian Food Grants Bank really stands apart. It is an initiative of 15 church-based agencies. So not Christian, but churches working together. And alongside HOPE, joined almost 20 years ago. We'll be celebrating our 20th anniversary next year. And when you think about the 15 church agencies that are represented there, we cover the entire spectrum. And at a time where theology can feel divisive, where we can see divisions between churches and splintering, the fact that 15 church agencies can come together and agree that God made a world of abundance, and that together we can work to end hunger and have that as our common unifying calling. A unique and important aspect of the Canadian Foods Grain Bank is the way the Canadian government has come alongside it. Many years ago, they began providing a match on all humanitarian funding. And that match over time has been extended to all programming done through the Canadian Food Grains Bank. So I'm highlighting here a project that we have in Northeast Kenya, in a region called Marsabit. And Marsabit is an area of pastoral herders. But over the years, as droughts have become more frequent, that is no longer a sustainable livelihood. Herds have gotten smaller, and the subsistence that they get from their herds is less and less. Through the matching, each member has an account at the Canadian Food Grains Bank, and whatever money we raise into our account, we're able to program out through different projects related to food security around the world. So this project began with fundraising $45,000 and putting that into our account at CFGB. That was then matched three times to mean that we could program $183,000 a year and reach almost 2,000 people. This is one of five projects that we have through the Canadian Food Grains Bank. Clarence has mentioned, I brought along this morning the Solar Suitcase, which is another campaign that we have, that we've had for quite a number of years. It began in 2016 as part of an All Mothers and Children Count program funded through the Canadian government. And we've made a commitment to the province of Nampula, which is in the northeast of Mozambique, has a population of about 6 million people. And many of the rural clinics are off the electrical grid. So if you come during the day, you can expect that, you know, you can be treated in the light of day. But at night, there often is no power. And so here we have a midwife who is holding a cell phone between her teeth as she tries to assess the health of a baby, needing both hands to do that. So we began in 2016, working with the government in Nampula province to identify rural clinics that were in need of electricity and providing each of them with a solar suitcase. So you can see it there on the wall and you can see it on the table in coffee afterwards. And this is a really simple solution. It creates power from what is plentiful, the sun. It stores it in a battery. And then in the evenings, simple LED lights can be turned on that light up the whole room, freeing up the healthcare workers' two hands to provide care. So since we began in 2016, we have covered nearly the whole province. So we are on the final push at the moment and have committed to raising funds for 25 suitcases this year to finish the coverage in Nampula province. And since this program began in 2016, there have been 80,000 births at night in the clinics that now have solar suitcases. I want to end with a little bit of a reflection on where is hope in this work. In my role as Director of Programs and Partnerships, I'm always aware that I am just one small part of our collective effort, our shared response as Anglicans and partners working for change here in Canada and around the world. So today I want to end reflecting on where I am seeing hope in this work, where I'm seeing light. And I want to start in a place not often associated with hope, and that's Ukraine. For several years, our partner, Voices of Children, has been running respite camps in the western part of the country. It's a quiet, mountainous area near the Hungarian border. They look like ordinary summer camps, but they're anything but ordinary. These camps are welcome children and their caregivers from front lines. kids who haven't been able to attend school, who haven't played outside freely, who've lost parents, who simply haven't been able to be kids for many years. I haven't had the chance to visit in person, but the children's artwork, often shared with us in reports, tells a story. In the first days of camp, it's quiet. Quiet because kids are decompressing. Quiet because for once there's no sirens, no bombs. But their artwork isn't quiet. The early drawings at camp show destruction. Broken houses, bombs, frightened faces. But God is present, creating a place of safety, a place of comfort and healing. For these families, the relief may be temporary, but it restores something essential. Caregivers are given coaching, support networks, and resources. And kids get days filled with games, art, laughter, and yes, light. Pictures of bombs give way to birds. Grays and blacks transform into greens and yellows. And by the end of the camp, you see the kind of drawings many of us will have had on our fridge. These images are bright and unmistakably light. I think there's often moments as well where there's flickering light in this work. I saw in the bulletin the current humanitarian coalition appeal for the Middle East. I had the chance in October to travel to Palestine to visit the Diocese of Jerusalem and several of their institutions, schools, vocational centers, and hospitals. The war in Gaza was raging at the time, so my visit focused on the West Bank. It's an area increasingly feeling the tight squeeze of Israeli checkpoints. I traveled around in a small taxi with Israeli plates, a Palestinian driver, and you could feel the ebbs and flows of tension as we moved between areas controlled by Israel and areas controlled by the Palestinian Authority. Cell phone signals would come and go, which meant Google Maps also came and went. A wrong turn, and we would find ourselves at the gate of a settlement, a no-go zone for the Palestinian driver. Trips that appeared short in theory, a couple of kilometers, could take hours as we snaked our way through detours. I was only a visitor, but within hours I could feel the tension in my own body, holding my breath at the sight of a checkpoint and letting out a sigh of relief when we returned safely to the diocesan compound in the evening. And everywhere I went, there were stories about how the occupation was shaping daily life. A school counselor told me about kindergartners who were becoming more violent in the playground, unable to process the stress that they were experiencing all around them. A hospital administrator explained how fewer patients were reaching the hospital, not because the needs had decreased, but people couldn't reach through the checkpoints. And as I often do in this work, I asked, "Where do you find hope? What are you hoping for?" And I think in this scenario, I thought I might hear justice or peace. I might have even understood vengeance. But what I heard instead was, we want to be seen as human. We want to be treated as people. And God is there, a flickering light in people holding stubbornly and faithfully to what we know as Christians to be true. It is not an eye for an eye. To hear Palestinian Christians calling for grace and mercy in the midst of relentless pressure was humbling, a small flickering candle in a dark time. And the last image of light I want to share is the light of a horizon. I spend a lot of time on airplanes, and for those of you that have been on a flight during a sunrise, know that when that first thin line of light appears, it's a narrow band of orange cutting across an otherwise dark sky. It captures your attention, even if you don't mean to look. You know the sun is coming, but not yet. And our collective work often has moments of this kind of light, partnerships that are just beginning, a new relationship that is being built, opportunities that hold so much potential, but not now, but very soon. In February, I attended a meeting of ACT Alliance, one of our key partnerships, Action by Churches Together is the acronym. And it's over 150 organizations from around the world. And this gathering brought together members from North America, Latin America, and the Caribbean. We were 30 organizations in one room, from different churches, different countries, different contexts, and many different histories. When planning for this event began a year ago, we had no idea how much we would have to talk about. From US actions in Venezuela, the ongoing and increasing embargo on Cuba, and so much more. Collaboration in this work can be messy, complex, and complicated. But this meeting reminded me again that unity doesn't require uniformity. By the end of the week, we had agreed on practical next steps together. We'd even crafted a public statement, one collective voice. And God was there, visible in the light shining through the cracks of our work, knitting us together. So as I flew home, it was that familiar African proverb that I'm sure you've heard, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And for me, that's the horizon light in this work. We still have a distance to travel, but we are doing it together. So we cannot deny the darkness in the world today, but we do not need to be overwhelmed by it. Instead, we choose to walk alongside one another in our collective response. So thank you very much for the invitation to share today, and I look forward to further conversations over coffee.
Thank you so much, Jackie.